people should give it a try. Also, we've got an interesting episode, Subgenius Ghost Hunters. It is now midnight in the city of San Francisco. We are about to move from the last few seconds of Friday into the new morning of Saturday. We expect to keep this show going until 1 a.m. unless we should be so fortunate as to be visited by K-Rob, in which case we might go longer. Slowly sang a scarlet rune, mingled with an icy laughter, like the laughter of the moon. Red as a wanton's was her mouth, and fair the breast she bade me take, with a word that clove and clung, burning like a furnace flame. But from that bright uplifted bosom, when I touched it with my hand, came the many-needled coldness of a glacier-taken land. And lo, the witch with eyes of amber vanished like a blown-out flame, leaving but a lichen-eaten stone that bore a blotted name. Fighting still and still destroying, fighting still and still destroying. If this world be worth the winning, if this world be worth the winning, think, oh think, it's worth enjoying. Lovely Thais sits beside thee, take the goods the gods provide thee, take, oh take the good the gods provide thee.
Sitting under a mushroom top.
War, he sang, is toil and trouble. Honor, but an empty bubble. War, he sang, is toil and trouble. Honor, but an empty bubble. Never ending, still beginning. Never ending, still beginning. Fighting still and still destroying. Fighting still and still destroying. If this world be worth the winning, if this world be worth the winning, think, oh think, it's worth enjoying.
Exciting tapes coming up in the second Mesozoic.
Yes, we aren't going to do that after all.
Vertebrate.
Yeah, Mesozoic vertebrate, that's where it's at. But not only am I going to crowd a Camarasaurus supremus into there, a fairly large specimen, but I've also got my eye on a Diprotodon. Never had one of those. A Polacanthus. Now, I do have a couple of Polacanthuses. They're all scientifically inaccurate. This one is pretty accurate. That's why I want it. And what else? There's always something. Bopo is coming out with a new Suchomimus. It's gorgeous. I want it. Carnegie or whatever it is, they are coming out with a gorgeous Megalosaurus. I like that too. I really ought to pick that up. And then there's an Ampelosaurus. That thing is spectacular. I must have it. And then I swear I'll stop collecting them. I'll just enjoy the ones I've got. You know, I don't have a Diprotodon. I do collect the other prehistoric animals than dinosaurs, and this is a mammal, a most interesting one. You see, all of these things suggest biological and historical possibilities. Just looking at them from many dimensions allows you to engage in this type of speculation.
It matters not how straight the gate.
Now my idea of phase
how charged
is
with
that I'm
punishment.
Not running the show at
yes,
all.
Yes.
So my feeling evidence is running.
What is that so thing I've got? The straight tusked forest elephant, an enormous elephant, far larger than any elephant of today. Paleoloxodon, I think it's called. They say it might even have challenged the giant Baleocotherium, as it was once called. Then it was called Indracotherium. Now it is called Paraceratherium. You gotta keep up with all this stuff.
Nothing can be
created. I don't even have a script.
Okay, Hal, that's the end of the line.
That wasn't me. That was Jim Kennedy, surely.
Philosopher Lucretius, who said...
Nothing can be created out of nothing.
That's right.
Nihilo ex nihil fit.
Let's analyze that.
Nihil ex nihil fit.
By starting here and contrast nothing.
Nothing.
What do you get?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Existence and being fountained into
Sure.
I was thinking about that just the other day.
See, Jim Kennedy, not me. When I whine about something, you'll know it. The ear-splitting, irritating whine I can produce is certainly better than anything Jim Kennedy might have been able to emote.
Back in the early cosmos, there was talking over Hal this time. It was the most exotic thing of all. It was the egg. The great cosmic egg, gleaming and glimmering in the middle of all things.
You know, I just got the latest issue of the Skeptical Inquirer. They're denying the Indian rope trick again, but I tell you, I've read of it in ancient sources. It actually is a thing. The people's scholarship seems so shallow these days.
We haven't talked about Mendel yet.
Gregor Mendel? The father of genetics. Puzzling evidence. Yes, the humble monk Gregor Mendel. His work was never recognized during his life, and for a considerable space after the end of his life.
See, that's cool. You ought to be doing that all the time during the real show.
I am doing that all the time during the radio.
But some things we like, even though there's no. evidence of them at all. Not of their physical structure, not of their body. But we know certain creatures from tracks and traces by which we are able to infer what they were like. So was the Cheirotherium, that strange creature of the early secondary era. Well, we never knew what one looked like, but we have the footprints that are very clear, fossil footprints of this creature, and it walks on four legs, and its legs are spaced in a reptilian fashion, and each foot looks like a human hand with a thumb and four fingers. Hence the name Cheirotherium. Cheiro, as in chiromancy, that is to say, the Greek word for hand, and therium, which means a beast. Theria are beasts, like tanatheres, megatheres, and so on. A hand beast, huh? Get it? Yeah? No one knows what it looked like, and the great Zdenek Burian drew a portrait of one, which is to say, he drew the footprints, and in the distance, the silhouette of a creature can be seen, which represents Cheirotherium.
Actually, the egg of the rock. The gigantic bird.
The giant bird that nests on the peaks of Colossus.
Of his outstretched wings.
Yes, I've mentioned the travels of Ibn Battuta. He saw the rock. The captain of the ship that he was on pointed it out to him. And it was terrifying. He thought it would destroy them. But it didn't.
Now, you must remember that all embryos look something like a particularly repulsive and helpless human being. Embryos of any creature, whether it's an aardvark or a Tyrannosaurus rex or even a mandrill or a basilisk, toads of the rice that killed the poppy cockalorum.
And the cockahoopa trice.
Basil Wolverine, yes.
Basil Wolfertine. Wolverine. Well, you know.
Thick-skinned badger, the splacknuck, and its relative, the calling dog.
The splacknuck is a strange case.
Came from an egg. The fundamental unit of the germplasm. How
about the moose?
It existed in Brobdingnag, but nowhere else, apparently.
Before there was a moose, there had to be a goose, that is to say, an egg layer. And this early layer was superseded by later layers who laid other eggs, and so on ad infinitum, ad nauseam.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Okay, I personally, I think that's enough about eggs.
I'm just getting started. Now, inside the egg, you've got the yolk, and you've got the allantois, the chorion, and the amnion. The amnion, of course, is the central portion of each egg, as we say in the Midwest, or egg, as we say everywhere else. Often when you've cracked open an egg, you might have noticed a tiny bloody spot on one end. Well, it's good that you did notice it, because
it was the gestation of life. And now the Republicans would throw you in jail for interrupting its development.
Oh, amniote egg, what a perfect little keg.
Oh, that's
out of the ocean, onto the land, the fin becomes the foot, and the foot becomes the hand.
Let's see if Rob's on the mic and give us some ideas.
Yeah, maybe.
That would be caller number 8.
Rob!
Turn that caller to the cold and damp, you guys.
What do we do now?
Help.
The whining part is over.
What you gonna do about that?
Yeah, you like it.
They can whine quite a bit.
Rob, how'd you like
when
that
you
whining?
When you are around a person who is...
You can be whined and dined in...
Okay, 2 seconds of whine.
...luxury and comfort.
One, two, three.
Stop that.
What do you think?
Okay, how is that?
Quit that whining. Now you really got me angry there with this whining. There's no point in that.
That was... 2 years.
Hell years.
Okay, now what?
Stop it. Or I'll give you something to whine about. That is to say...
the Aspen is a 70s car.
The Aspen. Yes, advertised by Rex Harrison on TV. Well, we're having a little bit of technical trouble here.
The moon was shining sulkily because the sun had got no business being there.
Yeah, I'll have to do that one, but not now.
Hello, little caller.
Now, come on. What do you mean, no USB? Oh, USB U.
Congratulations, you win.
No, I think he wins his own monthly show on KPFA.
My goodness.
And since there aren't going to be any more next month, that goes out.
No, it's going to happen, but why should it have switched from CD to USB?
No!
Unless they submit to the...
Now, just cut that out. Just cut that out.
You guys have got to be kidding.
Yeah, we're cool.
The point is to win a date for me, but not
with
some...
We're the cat's pajamas. With little Velcro fasteners.
Oh, stop. Put those things away. I don't want to see it.
Chocolate Jesus.
Oh, for God's sake. Don't you ever...
Chocolate.
I look like William Shatner on a hot Saturday night.
N-E-S-T-L-E-A. Nestle's makes the very best.
911.
Chocolate.
Yeah, come on, we're going to kick people out of here. Time's up. Drink your coffee. Get out. It's 10 after.
Chocolate in your coffee? Well, that sounds pretty good.
All you have to do is turn this show up really loud.
Turn this show upside down and scrape the crap off it and give it back to the Indians. That's what I say.
No birds. We're flying.
And even the policemen are scared away.
Don't mention the policemen. We don't want any trouble with the authorities. Everything here at the show is open and above board.
Someone starts talking over someone else, and the second person starts talking loud.
And when I say board, well, I think you all know what I mean.
And it's a constantly building series of overlapping
of concatenating, overlapping, jibber-jabbering, speechy screeches.
There's nothing we can do about it. Once everybody starts whining.
So everybody get up out of bed. Go over here on VC.
Get up out of bed and do vigorous calisthenics. That's what I'm going to have to do tomorrow because Ed Holmes wants to drag me off to some dew-studded comic book fair just so we can distribute copies of our religious tract, which is entitled Stupid. It's a religious tract which I drew to promulgate the ideology of the First Church of the Last Laugh. They are fellow travelers with subgeniuses, though not subgeniuses themselves. Some of their ranks are subgeniuses. But we are in accord with them. Yes. When mine baby, you're walking down the Strasse, all the little birdies, well...
Birdie with a yaller bill hopped upon my windowsill.
Cocked his beady eye and said, ain't you ashamed, you sleepy head? The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright. And this was odd, because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily because she thought the sun had got no business being there after the day was done. How very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet as wet could be. The air was dry as dry. You could not see a cloud, because no cloud was in the sky. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly. The walrus and the carpenter were walking close at hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. If this were only cleared away, they said, it would be grand. If seven maids with seven mops swept it for half a year, do you suppose, the walrus said, that they could get it clear? I doubt it, said the carpenter, and shed a bitter tear. Oh, oysters, come and walk with us. The walrus did beseech. A pleasant walk, walk, a pleasant talk, along the briny beach. We cannot do with more than four to give a hand to each. The eldest oyster looked at him, but never a word he said. The eldest oyster winked his eye and shook his heavy head, meaning to say he did not choose to leave the oyster bed. But four young oysters hurried up, all eager for a treat. Their faces washed, their coats were brushed, their shoes were clean and neat. And this was odd, because, you know, they hadn't any feet. Then four more oysters hurried up, and then another four, and thick and fast they came at last, and more and more and more, all scrambling through the frothy waves and hopping to the shore. The walrus and the carpenter walked on a mile or so until they came unto a spot conveniently low. And there the little oysters stood before them in a row. "The time has come," the walrus said, "to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, and cabbages and kings, and why the sea is boiling hot, and whether pigs have wings." "But wait a bit," the oysters cried. "And then what?" Wait a bit, the oysters. "Oh, yes. Before we have our chat, for some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat."
"No worry," said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that.
"A loaf of bread," the walrus said, "is what we chiefly need. Pepper and vinegar besides are very good indeed. Now, if you're ready, oysters dear, we can begin to feed."
"But not on us," the oysters cried, turning a little blue. "After such kindness, that would be a dismal thing to do."
"The night is fine," the walrus said. "Do you admire the view?"
"It was so kind of you to come. And you are very nice." The carpenter said nothing but, "Cut us another slice. I wish you were not half so deaf. I've had to ask you twice."
"It seems a shame," the walrus said, "to play them such a trick after we brought them out so far and made them trot so quick." The carpenter said nothing but,
"The butter's spread too thick."
"I weep for you," the walrus said. "I deeply sympathize." With sobs and tears he sorted out those of the largest size, holding his pocket handkerchief before his streaming eyes.
"Oh, oysters," said the carpenter, "we've had a pleasant run. Shall we be trotting home again?"
But answer came there none. And this was odd, because, you know, they'd eaten everyone.
I, being the challenge,
26
fired,
tapes in a row.
My rusty, trusty pistol. I fired, he fell. We rushed to a nearby inn, where I met a guard.
Good job.
It was a dark and stormy night outside the gates of Paris. I, being the challenged party, drew my rusty, trusty pistol. I fired, he fell. We rushed to a nearby cafe. Where I met a... I met too much dust. It interferes with my sinuses. This cafe should be aired out.
All right, everybody. It's, you know, the show rolls on. The show must go on. And the show does go on. Why doesn't somebody do something? Well, because nobody cares to stop it. All the forces of order and decency are assembled against us, but actually, they don't give a fart in a bottle about whether we're here or not. So we creep along. We sneak along under their radar. And no one knows we're here, except perhaps for a radar-activated robot known as Roger. Are you some kind of robot?
He just talked. You can't listen to this many people.
You can talk, you can bicker. You can talk, you can bicker. You can talk, bicker, 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 bicker. You can talk, you can bicker, but it's a bit different than it was. No one answers. So no one cares for the Circle of Popelius? I can certainly explain what that is if anyone is interested. Instead, it seems to have irritated Mr. Don Joyce. That is a pity. After all, what harm in learning about the Circle of Popelius, eh? Of the dodos. What is the point of living such a preposterous length of time? All is new again. Remember the horses clopping over the cobblestones and the cries of old Cripplegate in the streets of London.
Oh! my feet back on the ground.
If you break my heart, I'll go. But I'll be back again. Yes, I'm the one that loves you. When the moon is drowned in the coiling fen mist far along the ground, ye that see in darkness, say, what have ye found? We have seen strange storms drifting on the air, the dust of vanished lovers long parted in despair, and dust of flowers that withered in worlds of otherwhere. We have seen the nightmares winging down the sky, bat-like and silent, to where the sleepers lie. We have seen the bosoms of the succubi. We have seen the crystal of dead Medusa's tears. We have watched the undines that wane in stagnant weirs, and mandrakes madly dancing by black blood-swollen mirrors. We have seen the satyrs, their ancient loves renew with moon-white nymphs of Cyprus, pale dryads of the yew, in the tall grass of graveyards, weighed down with evening's dew. We have seen the darkness where charnel things decay, where atom moves with atom in shining swift array, like ordered constellations on some sidereal way. We have seen fair colors that dwell not in the light, intenser gold and iris, occult and recondite. We have seen the black suns pouring forth the night. Of Clark Ashton Smith and Lewis Carroll. AM on the Ask Dr. Howell show, live on radio. Dr. Howell and Dowell presiding on Radio Valencia. .fm. I suppose I should stop objecting to the pretense that this is radio. Why not? It's annoying, but there are all sorts of things to get excised about. All I have is a voice to undo the folded lie, the romantic lie in the brain of the sensuous man in the street, and the lie of authority whose buildings grope the sky. There is no such thing as the state, and no one exists alone. Hunger allows no choice for the citizen or the police. We must love one another and die. Helpless under the night, our world in stupor lies. Yet, dotted here and there, iconic points of light flash out wherever the just exchange their messages. May I, composed like them of eros and of dust, beleaguered by the same negation and despair, show an affirming flame. Hit it, boys. insects in here. Well, hey, remember how we used to hang out when we was all so young, growing up all on the block together, playing where the clotheslines hung? We'd turn over privies and spook horses. We'd go alley slopering. We'd hawk apples off all the fruit stands. Boy, we didn't miss a thing. Remember when we was just tenderloining the ropes on city streets? We got around. We knew the town far more than the bulls who walked the beats. Boy, hood days sure was glorious. We was notorious even then. Boyhood ways sure come natural. And when you're flat, you're all set to begin playing to win. We would skip school. Then we'd shoot pool. And we'd fleece the fools with bets we'd run. And when I knew to pick up my cue stick, that was the summer I got my first gun. Boyhood ways of the business and every day's Christmas when you're on the top. Boyhood ways of soft soapin', but keep your eye open to scout for a cop. That was back then. Now that we're men, we all know the ropes, we're living high. We get around, we know the ground. It's easy for us, we don't even try. Manhood days. Would we do it over? We'd do it again. Gwangi the Great, the living wonder of the prehistoric era. A mysterious recess in the inaccessible mountains of Mexico's Sierra Madre Oriental. The fabled Forbidden Valley, a.k.a. the Valley of Gwangi. Gwangi, what a funny word. Well, it is a Native American word. Not Japanese, as some people have assumed. Not at all. You must go to the indigenous language to find its origin.
Thank you.
feat of gallantry, ordinary bravery and daring do, without intestine violence. A fight is challenged, but never occurs. So let's ride. I saw Guanji in, I guess it was 1970, in an unair-conditioned theater in Silver Spring, Maryland. Really hot. And it was packed with screaming kids. And it was part of a double bill. Valley of Guanji was one, and Scream and Scream Again was another. Two quite incompatible films. But how wonderful to have the experience of seeing Harryhausen's work for the first time. Sit up, kids. At least I'm sitting here in the middle of civilization when I could be out under a blistering sun trying to keep going in the unforgiving desert. As I am once a year anyway, I nearly got lost in the desert, or rather during a blinding sandstorm, dust storm. Visibility was down to nothing. Couldn't see, couldn't breathe, couldn't find out where I was. But I didn't panic, and I managed to find my way back. Because nobody puts anything over on Fred C. Dobbs, see? Bob's great-uncle Dobbs. Just a little shanty in old shanty town. The roof is so slanty, it touches the ground. But my tumble-down shack by the old railroad track, like a millionaire's mansion, keeps calling me back. I'd give up a palace if I were a king. It's more than a palace, it's my everything. There's a queen waiting there with a silvery crown in my shanty in old shanty town. In my shanty, however so slanty, in old shanty town. Be it ever so humble. 42. All right. right, everybody. In just a minute, I'm going to take you into this tent and show you the most horrifying sight your eyes have ever beheld. And I warn you, as someone who has supervised many carnival attractions in my time, I must say that for being a shocker, this one takes the cake. Young man, you might not want to take your girl into here. She might not forgive you for it. And I'd advise the elderly and the weak at heart to keep themselves from the shock of seeing the hideous sight. Oh, good Lord, I just lost track of it. All right. Here we go. Don't say that you weren't warned. Here it is. Get that curtain down. Get that curtain down. Sorry, folks. Make your way to the exits as quickly as possible. Cosmos, vast and mysterious, our home. Who wants to visit another dimension? Isn't this good enough? We're designed to be here. In other planes of existence, not so. Be satisfied with the bounty of the universe.
Sind wir dann hoch oben im Raum zum Rendezvous? Winken Himmelsbrüder, lachen Grüße zu. Weltenraum, unsere Erde schweben, fern und märchenblau. Stell dir vor, man kann uns im Kosmos tanzen sehen, wie wir beide schwerelos uns im Kreise drehen.
Well, it looks like we're not going to see K-Rod, but that means I can close the show at 1 and go home and be ready for tomorrow's unfortunate early morning extravaganza. And how about that? Sometimes things have a way of working out.
That's right. And so, I'm going to have to say, it's time to ring down the curtain on this type of entertainment. Yes, that's right. We can't keep doing this show on and on forever and ever. I mean, what kind of an existence do you suppose that would be? Like that Neo Twilight Zone episode about the repulsive stand-up comedian who went to hell and found that hell consisted of him doing his act over and over again to the end of time. And furthermore, his act now had to be jokes about the terrible way he behaved while alive and on Earth. Only those would get laughs from his demonic audience. Otherwise, he was bombing on stage, which is painful in hell as it is here. One wishes to satisfy one's audience, whoever they may be, and in whatever manner it might happen. Thus, the performer in that regard has that much of the geisha or the sex worker in the performer's makeup, because audience satisfaction is an important thing. Therefore, on the Ask Dr. Hal show, we wish to say that we hope at least somebody was entertained tonight, and in other versions and variations of this show. But do watch the Ask Dr. Hal show, the home edition, on Sunday, 6 o'clock, at AskDrHalShow.com. You really ought to check out that bizarro Bugs Bunny cartoon, but we've got a lot of interesting stuff to present. And there's Relodeo tomorrow night. We'll see how it all works out. But until then, this is Dr. Howland Owl telling you good night and good morning.